25 years on the PGA Tour and a lifetime member of the PGA Tour and PGA of America. Jay Delsing brings you his perspective on one of the world's greatest games as a professional golfer and network broadcaster. It's the game that connects the pros and the average Joes. Brought to you by Whitmore Country Club. Golf with Jay Delsing is now on 101 ESPN.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Golf with Jay Delsing. I am your host, Jay Delsing, and with me is my buddy, longtime friend, caddy, John Perlis. Perley, good morning.
Good to be here with you, Jay. I've had a great week. Actually, we got to play a little golf together and ready to go with the show.
Okay, so let's just get this out. Uh-oh. You had a great experience this week.
Yeah, I did.
Tell us about the first. We talk when we have guests on the show. We ask them about golf and their life and golf and their career, yeah, and things like that. Their first golf experience, and you had a tremendous input on someone's first golf experience,
yeah,
this week.
My grandson, little William, 6 years old, never really had a club in his hand before. Went on the driving range. He's like, "Grandpa, I want to learn how to play a little golf."
Yep.
And was it fun? Of course, took videos of him, took pictures of him, everything else. You know, and again, 6 years old, and this is a creative kid. Loves all kinds of sports, big time into soccer because his older brother's into soccer. His older brother's a very good player, so he's always trying to keep up. So I thought golf might be something where he can kind of do his own thing. He doesn't have to compete nonstop. So we, yeah, went out just a little driving range near the house, and it was so much fun to hit balls with him. And I get up there, I'm thinking, I haven't given a lesson in a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm watching this thinking, how am I going to get, yeah, this creative, energetic little kid
to focus for more than, you
just
know,
generally
seconds
in the right direction,
yeah,
in case,
right,
he hits it, which,
right,
might not happen.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, the second day, he actually hit it 8 times in a row, which was thrilling. And every time he'd get it out up in the air, he would turn around and look at me like, what the heck was that? And you could tell he just loved the way it felt,
yeah,
and,
yeah,
kind of the power and,
yep,
stuff behind it. And he missed it a lot of times, and he had 45 different excuses why I missed
That's
it.
That's wonderful.
But, and then you're giving me a hard time because, as is my way, I gave him some structure.
Oh,
so
yeah,
I
it's
had
like
him.
Military. All right, left foot, right foot. Grandpa, don't talk to me, son. You're doing, no, I'm just kidding.
So,
it was really
but I,
good.
I did good because he would say, I don't want to do it that way. So, okay, here's the deal. You do, yep, it your way 3 times,
yep,
then we'll do it the way I'm suggesting,
yep,
3 times.
Yep.
And whether he whiffed it or hit it great for him, which was about 18 or 19 yards, but in the air.
Who cares? Who cares?
He had the best time, and I complimented,
awesome,
him if it was a complete whiff. Yep. If he fell down, didn't fall down, we just really had a good time. And I buy a little bucket of balls, so I'm going to guess there's 25 balls in there. And I'm thinking there's no way he's going to get through all those balls. And both times we went out there, he hit them all,
yeah,
and wanted some more.
That's awesome.
It was great. I love
Speaking
it.
Of great, how about this show that we got today? We're going to see Justin Hoglund visit Justin down at Golf Tech. We got a new edition of Whack and Chase, which is really becoming popular. It's hard to not laugh when we say that, right? And talk a little bit about the FedEx Cup, but I've got a great interview with Tony La Russa.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know, you've had some really good interviews, but maybe the best so far.
You know, the guy's just a Hall of Famer anyway, so we hope you folks will enjoy that. Let's get down to Justin Hoglund. He is the city manager and fellow PGA professional at Golf Tech. And don't forget, the August sale at Golf Tech, up to 20% off lesson plans and programs. It is the time for their lowest prices on lessons throughout the year.
Thanks for having me again, Jay. I want to talk about what's going on in August here at Golf Tech. Believe it or not, this is our biggest month of the year at Golf Tech. And the reason for that is that our students are already prepping for the off season and getting their game ready for next year, and by practicing here and taking lessons. And I mentioned in my prior talks about practice last week about how at Golf Tech we allow our members to take both lessons and are able to practice in our temperature controlled bays, and with the practice and the video feedback, able to review their swings in slow motion frame by frame. This kind of practice is so important for improving one's game, and that's the big reason why people improve so fast at Golf Tech. Now, the big reason why August is so important for us and so active for us is because this month is our biggest sale of the year. For anyone that calls us from your radio show, they're going to be eligible for up to 20% discount on lesson programs and plans for the entire month of August. So you've got till the end of the month. So we start you off with a swing evaluation and a customized plan for your game. Get your improvement on track really fast, and over the course of weeks. Again, this is our biggest month of the year at Golf Tech in Clayton, DePere, and Chesterfield location. Your folks can give us a call at 314-721-GOLF. That's 314-721-4653, extension 1, 2, or 3. All types of golfers, we welcome novice and advanced to beginner to tournament and seasoned players. We're ready to help anyone that wants to give us a call and that are serious about your game. It's a great time to get involved with Golf Tech with our lesson plans. Again, up to 20% off. Make sure to mention the Jay Delsing Radio Show to get in on the deal. And we look ready to help anyone who wants to give us a show. Thanks for having me again, Jay. Appreciate it.
Great stuff, Justin. Thanks so much for supporting the show and helping people with their game. Okay, so we have the last full field event before the playoffs. Okay, and whether you like the playoffs or not, I'm still trying to get comfortable with the playoffs, really.
I love them. I love them. I do.
That's
like
great. I know you are a gigantic golf fan in terms of you watch more than I do.
But I want to see the players be in different situations than they're accustomed for. I like to see them. That's why I like Ryder Cup, President's Cup, the places where it's just not the same, which I still love, the robotic regular tournaments. These guys have a different level of heat. There's different things going on. They've got points. And I remember when it first came out, I thought there was no chance for this whole concept. But I think it's taken off big time.
Well, and we talked about it last week. You only get $15 million for winning.
Yeah.
So what else do we need to talk about?
Even these guys are excited about that.
Yeah, that's right. So I looked at the list on the bubble. Really not anybody interesting. I hate to say that, my fellow professionals down there. I know it's interesting to them. They want to get in this thing and make a hell of a lot of more money. But I'm not going to even bring any of that up because it's not – you know, Jason Duffner was the only kind of recognizable name that was on the outside looking in. And, I mean, he's okay, but...
But this is also, you mentioned this in one of the last shows about different opportunities guys have to kind of get to that next level in their careers and maybe start getting noticed or, more importantly, start getting more confidence in themselves. And this is one of those where one of these guys can kind of pop it and kind of get in there.
Yep.
Guys that maybe weren't normally in it, and let alone have a good tournament the next time and stay in there. It changes their career, Jay, because it builds their confidence.
Well, you know how golf is, too. One of the hardest things was ever to be prepared and playing well when you need it the most. And I sucked at it, let's be honest. I never knew.
I couldn't disagree more with you. I could not.
Man, I don't know I was.
You and I used to talk about when your back was up against the wall, whether it was to make a cut, to keep your card.
I was okay then.
You played some. Don't sell yourself. No, sometimes.
I'm a tremendous slouch. Judge, don't sell yourself short. You're a tremendous slouch. Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That's going to do it for the On the Range segment. The On the Range segment, by the way, was sponsored by Golf Discount, where St. Louis shops for all of its golf needs. I got to do this because this is kind of fun. Look us up on all of our social media stuff because this is really important, and we care a lot about this.
Well, we do care about it.
We do care about this.
I just don't know how it works.
My Twitter feed is at Jay Delsing. My Facebook is Golf with Jay Delsing and Jay Delsing Golf. And my LinkedIn is just Jay Delsing. That's just too many Jay Delsings for me to say in one sentence.
The World Wide Web is flooded with Jay Delsing.
I know. And then we have our Instagram account, which.
What?
Huh?
Okay.
Blah. Okay. That's going to do it for the On the Range segment. Come back for that Tony La Russa interview. This is Golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN.
Doster, Olam & Boyle, LLC are a proud sponsor of Golf with Jay Delsing here on 101 ESPN. The firm was started in January 2015 by Mike Doster, Jess Olam, and John Boyle, three veterans of the St. Louis real estate, banking, commercial, and corporate legal landscape. The firm was founded on the shared view that success should be measured by client and community satisfaction, not profits for partner. The firm's focus is on business, real estate, corporate, finance and restructuring, and succession planning. Since its founding in 2015, Doster, Olam & Boyle have been involved in real estate, business, and corporate transactions with a combined value in excess of over $1 billion. For decades, Doster, Olam & Boyle lawyers have been recognized as leaders in their practice areas by their peers. Doster, Olam & Boyle, LLC. Extraordinary talent, ordinary people. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
I want to welcome my newest sponsor to Golf with Jay Delsing. It's Golf Discount. Golf Discount is where St. Louis has shopped for its golf equipment since 1976. Golf Discount has been and still is locally owned. They employ the most experienced staff you'll find anywhere. There are two locations, one in South County just off of Lime Ferry and one in O'Fallon at Highways K and N. Golf Discount fits your custom equipment to your swing using the state-of-the-art GC Quad Launch Monitor. This ensures that perfect fit that you're looking for. Go to Golf Discount for all your golfing needs. I want to thank Whitmore Country Club for sponsoring my show, Golf with Jay Delsing. There's 90 holes of golf at Whitmore. If you join out at Whitmore, you get privileges at the Missouri Bluffs, the Links of Dardenne, Golf Club of Wentzville, and all the cart fees are included in that membership. There's no food and beverage minimums and no assessments ever. They've got a great 24-hour fitness center, a large pool complex, three tennis courts, a year-round social calendar that is rocking out at Whitmore. There's kids' clubs, junior golf, junior tennis, swim team available for your children. This is a family-friendly atmosphere, a wonderful staff, and you've got to go to the golf shop and visit my friend, Bummer. He is an absolute treat. Don't forget about the golf leagues, their skin games, members' tournaments. Bummer and the staff out of Whitmore are continually running cool and fun golf events for you and your family. Visit their website at whitmoregolf.com.
You're listening to Golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN. You can find Jay online at jaydelsinggolf.com.
Welcome back. This is Golf with Jay Delsing. Jay and John are here to bring you this segment we call the Front Nine. I had the privilege and the honor to sit down with Tony La Russa. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Hall of Fame manager Tony La Russa. Tony, man, you know I'm a baseball geek. I just love the game, and I had so much fun watching you manage. Even, you know, I remember when you were at the White Sox and then with Oakland, and then had the great privilege of coming down and watching you here with the Cardinals. One of the things that I wanted some of the folks to know to me that I'd like to hear you talk about is you always seemed so prepared. Was that something that you learned as a player or coming up through the ranks?
Well, I was raised in at that time, the Kansas City A's organization. You know, I signed in the early 60s, and when they went to Oakland in 68, soon thereafter they won three championships in a row. So there was a real good development system there. And you know, the preparation of them that you had to learn the basics, and the way that you made them yours, you know, that they became part of your skills were that you just pounded. So, you know, I had a nice understanding that to take talent and make it a skill, you had to learn and prepare it. But it took out a whole new face as a manager, Jay, because, you know, I was not a good player. I hadn't managed very long, and I got the White Sox situation. And I realized that what I provided our club as a leader was way short compared to, you know, they had legends in the American League when I started, you know, Sparky, Billy, Earl, Whitey, Gene, you know, it goes on and on. So preparation became some way to close the gap. And, you know, we always prepared, man. The one thing that bothered me a little bit when people talk about us preparing, but I think that you got to distinguish that preparing is just studying for the test. The most important thing you do is taking the test. So we would take that preparation and then try to compete as hard and as well as we could.
Well, and it really showed. I think, man, when you start thinking about the icons of the game that you know, when you were with that White Sox club, when you were actually on the field and managing the White Sox, how much did you learn from those other managers and watching them manage against you and watching some of the strategies that they employed?
Well, that's the one best lesson I ever heard, and learned it from George Kissel, the great mentor and coach with the St. Louis Cardinals. My last year that I was kind of a player, I was a player coach in the Cardinal system. And so there in spring training, I learned from George that every game you play is the best learning experience. Just review afterwards what you learned about other teams, your team, yourself, and the game, how it should be played. So learning has always been something that's been critical and still is. So one of the nice things when I got into the big leagues as a young manager, there are guys like Sparky Anderson and Chuck Tanner and, you know, Billy Martin, John McEnroe, that really, Dick Williams, were really open to me. And I was clueless, man. I was coming from nowhere. And they gave me the ABCs, and then over time I realized how lucky I was, and I realized that that learning process continues.
You know, Tony, one of the things that when I play golf and I come right off the golf course and you're talking about learning and reviewing what happened, man, there was this I needed a down period of almost an hour or so to just decompress and try to figure out what the hell I just did. Sometimes really good, oftentimes really bad. And I watch you guys have to go right in front of the media right after the game. That's got to be brutally hard.
Well, I think that it's probably unfair, and what happens is that everybody suffers. Just like you say, you know, you come off the golf course and you've been competing. I mean, your emotions are raging. You know, your head's flying all over the place, and you need a chance to back off. So, same thing when you manage. You know, you're competing out there against another team. You got the responsibility to put players in a position to succeed. So, the decompression is not going to happen in 10 minutes, so you're forced to go there, no more than 10 minutes. So sure enough, what happens is that sometimes, you know, you give answers that are, you know, kind of curt. You know, you're really fighting to say something that isn't, you know, taken the wrong way by your team or by the other team, and it's just a real struggle. So I agree, man. Think of waiting an hour. I think that your answers would be better. The fans would enjoy it more. The media would enjoy it more.
Yeah, I can just remember sometimes coming off the golf course and having my head just swimming because I'm like, if you'd have given me $1 million, I could have never hit the ball over there, you know, and I just did it when I didn't want to or when I wanted to, you know, and that's a tough part of what you guys do. Tony, amazing when I sit there and look at your career, look at your stats. You're the third most winningest manager in baseball. I grew up in a baseball family, and I learned the book, and I learned the box scores. I learned, you know, just as a fan would. Did you ever in your wildest dreams, I mean, 2,728 wins, you won 3 world championships, you were 4-time manager of the year, 5 times you were runner-up manager of the year. I mean, how the hell did this evolve for you? Because like you said, you weren't a great player, but you turned into such a great manager. I mean, it has to be a love for the game in there.
Well, I think I was introduced to the game. I lived in Tampa, Florida, and that's a hotbed of baseball. Al Lopez, you know, the legendary catcher, manager, was a hero in our area. My dad's mom's side, you know, they loved the game. So I was raised in baseball, and then I, you know, had some ability, and I played in high school and signed the night I graduated. So, you know, I had the dreams of being a star player. I just didn't make it. But I did play, you know, I lasted 16 years and had a lot of injuries early. And thinking back later, you know, I realized I had some toughness I didn't know I had. But I persevered a lot because I loved the game so much. I didn't want to, as long as I was, you know, making a decent living and playing respectably, I didn't want to just give it up. So that, when I realized I wasn't going to make it, I started going to law school. And I got a degree. I was going to be a lawyer. I started managing just to get the bug off my back. You know, my wife and I didn't have kids at the time. To think that soon thereafter I got a big league job and lasted all those years was never, ever in the plan. And even when I first got that job, I knew I was definitely not qualified experience-wise. And fortunately, I worked for great people. It was Bill Veeck and then Jerry Reinsdorf. I had Roland Heeman as a GM. And throughout my career, that was the key. I always said great owner, had great front office, and we always got players, and I survived.
Oh, man, and players, Tony. Did you have some players throughout your career? Holy smokes. I don't even know where to start on the list and don't want to be disrespectful to anyone. But, man, you had some unbelievable players.
See, you know what I do sometimes? I mean, I did it for years, and then I still do it from time to time. I get my lineup card out, and I make out. I would start with a starting lineup, right? Well, right away, when you make out a starting lineup, you realize you got to make out the roster of 25 because, you know, I had as a young manager at Carlton Fisk, the great Hall of Famer. Well, you know, later on in St. Louis, I had Yadier Molina. And then we had two other really good catchers, Mike Matheny and Terry Steinbeck was in Oakland. So I've gone, you know, first base, is it Albert, is it McGuire? I mean, this is ridiculous. You start looking at it, you know, the outfielders, and it's really to make the point, if I put that roster out there of, you know, how we're two or three deep at every position, I'm talking about with great players, you see how fortunate. And then you get to the pitchers, the same thing. You know, we've had Cy Young winners, we've had some really good relievers. You had a great reliever like Eckersley. So it's it's an embarrassment of riches. And I say, I'm so lucky. It's I never take it for granted. I just embrace it.
Man, what a roster that would be, and what a fun exercise. I would love to read that. So Tony, what would you say amongst those great players, what is the single biggest trait that you notice that you could say all those great players have?
Well, the ones that are great, at some point, they realize that everybody, literally everybody that signs, has talent. Now, some are more talented than others, but they realize that talent is just what gets you signed, that you've got to develop skills. And the key to that is understanding the basics, really hammering them, working on them, so that you become more skillful as a pitcher, defender, base runner, hitter. But you really embrace the knowledge of how to pitch or play the game. You know, the great ones, they understand. You know, when you cut it back and you're down, it's really simple. Like tonight, I mean, I'm here in Boston, Yankees against Boston. I mean, with all of the other, you know, distractions, or it really is our team against their team as a score. So if you want to be a great pitcher or player, you got to know that the priority is the competition and what you can contribute to it. And then you break down that, you know, if you're a position player, man, you know, you got to defend and run bases. You got to take at bats based on whether you start a rally or finish one. If you're a pitcher, you know, you've got to do this. So it's getting really smart, dedicating yourself to learning your craft, you know, becoming a real craftsman. And what your bottom line is, you will see guys with less talent become much better player, more productive players, have more championships than guys with more talent that never ever get, you know, are clueless about how hard they had to work and how much they had to learn.
Yeah, it's about heart and grit, isn't it?
Well, I think in the end, mentally and physically toughness, mental and physical toughness, is more important than talent.
Yeah, you know what's interesting, Tony? Tiger Woods, I'm a competitive guy. I really am. I can't even hold a candle to this dude in just a competitive nature. He is a guy that doesn't give up on any play. He might have a three wood into a par four for par after hitting one out of bounds or something. And he's got every ounce of focus and attention. Is there anybody through the years that sticks out to you like that?
Well, I mean, I actually, because of, you know, how I managed, as you said, you know, 33 years and was around not just our teammates, but watched guys on the other side. I've seen that greatness, off enough, you know, golf is a one-person sport, but you're playing against some great golfers. You know, in baseball, you got a team sport, so you've got greatness on both sides that are either, you know, pitchers or position players. So what Tiger has done, you know, I mean, Ricky Henderson is a base stealer, Albert Pujols, you know, the Eckersley as a closer. You know, you talk about the great starters that we've had, you know, Dave Stewart, Bob Welsh, Chris Carpenter, Darryl Kyle, Adam Wainwright. I mean, these guys have that same kind of intensity. But in the end, I think, you know, when I watch Tiger, he's trying to win the tournament. And I know that, you know, the more successful you are, and you don't have to worry about can you win enough to keep your card, you know, there's a certain luxury of that. But my point is, what we try to teach each guy is, if you want to be the most successful, you want to be the most selfish you can be, then you better hope you play on a team that wins, and you better hope you contribute to it. So I think sometime my dad always said, you know, the more distracted, complicated, confusing, simpler you keep it. It's what can you do to help win the game today? Whatever your responsibility is, be accountable for it.
Some of the things that I've learned through all the years, Tony, are some of the things that I want to teach my children and teach anybody that wants to listen. Because that accountability and being responsible and, you know, working hard, those are things that, you know, were hammered into my head when I was a kid.
Well, I can't agree with you more, you know, and I think that is the importance of sports. I mean, I know it's an entertainment and it helps you get away from real life, but if you really study what's going on team-wise or with individuals, you know, there are personal quality values that you can take into your life, you know, as a parent, as a whether you're a father, mother, whether you're a child that's trying to learn to be responsible, you know, sport people that are productive and successful in sports, you know, that's their vocation, and especially when you play in a team, you know, you really try, you try to create this brotherhood, this family. So it's, you know, you want to be a member of that family. There's certain respect and trust and caring that you have to demonstrate. That carries over into real life.
Don't go anywhere. That's got to wrap up the front nine. There's more of this Tony La Russa interview coming to you. This is Golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN.
Quick note, we just got a call from our friend Joe Schieser at USA Mortgage. He said the rates are still below 4%, and if you mention Golf with Jay Delsing, he'll give you a discount on your closing costs. Please call him today at 314-628-2015.
Are you looking for a golf training facility and PGA pros to help you out year-round? Make sure you get to Golf Tech. They've been in St. Louis since 2007 and have three convenient locations to serve you. They've got state-of-the-art video equipment, and you can take your lesson home with you and replay it as much as you'd like. Start with a golf swing evaluation for only $125 and let a Golf Tech coach customize a game plan for you. 314-721-GOLF. You can find them online as well, golftech.com-St. Louis. Play better. Swing better. Golf Tech.
Do you folks know about a third-generation jeweler that's been operating in the St. Louis area since 1946? Well, if you haven't heard the name Sutley before, you have now. They are the premier Hearts on Fire dealer in the metropolitan region and have been for more than 20 years. What's the Hearts on Fire diamond? It is the world's most perfectly cut stone. The Sutleys are knowledgeable and passionate about jewelry. They're open 6 days a week. They want to develop a relationship so that they can meet all of your jewelry needs. They have famous designers like Lagos, Zengani, and Simon G, just to name a few. Whether it's a Hearts on Fire diamond or any piece of jewelry, please visit the Sutley family. They are located at Lamp and Lantern Village on Clayton Road, just west of 141 in Town and Country. Or you can go see them at saettele.com.
After 25 years on the PGA Tour, Jay Delsing takes you behind the scenes from the eyes of a pro. Now back to more golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN.
Welcome back to Golf with Jay Delsing. I'm your host, Jay. I've got my favorite caddy buddy, John Perlis, here with me, and we are headed to the back nine. But before we get back to the Tony La Russa interview, I've got to thank and talk about my friends at Whitmore Country Club. There's 90 holes of golf at Whitmore Country Club. If you join at Whitmore, you get access to the Links of Dardenne, Missouri Bluffs, and the Golf Club of Wentzville, and the cart fees are included in that membership. There are no food or beverage minimums. There are no assessments ever. They have a 24-hour fitness center and a large pool complex. There's three tennis courts. Year-round social calendar rocks out there. The holiday parties are legendary. There's picnics, date nights, live music, kids clubs, and much, much more for your children. Junior golf, junior tennis. There's a swim team that's available. We're talking about a family-friendly, family-centric atmosphere with a wonderful staff. And you got to go and stop in the golf shop and see Bummer Berry, who's a friend of the Golf with Jay Delsing show. He's been on the show. We will have him on again. He will help you with anything you need. He's a terrific guy. So reach out to Whitmore at 636-926-9622. All right, St. Louis, we've got part two of the Tony La Russa interview. I hope you enjoy it. Tony, Tell everybody how important Dave Duncan was to you and your success. How much time do we have, right?
Well, I mean, I'm laughing because I just talked to him this morning for half an hour. And I tell everybody, I brag on him so much that people I know that they don't grasp his greatness because you had to watch it every day. The real neat irony coincidence is that, you know, I signed in 1962 with the A's as a teenager. Dave signed in 1963. So we've known each other, you know, for all these years. Dave had a very successful 10-year career as a catcher. You know, I was not a good player. But we were together 29 years as pitching coach manager, and he was the perfect pitching coach. I don't want to disrespect anybody else because I didn't work with anybody else like that. But there wasn't one box that Dave didn't check as a pitching coach. Everything that you wanted a pitching coach to do, Dave could do it, and he did it totally to benefit the pitchers and contribute to the team. It was, you know, he never had an ego about it, and he was innovative, brilliant. A lot of stuff that you see now, even some of the stuff that the formulas point out, Dave had figured out and was using to get hitters out years ago. And it's funny because I just talked to him this morning, and we were talking about, you know, some of the mistakes are being made today. You know, you can pitch up too much. There's a lot of outs up. You keep stay up there. There's a lot of home runs are hit because you got the ball up now where one's supposed to be. And there is something still to getting the ball down the zone with movement and then mixing in some up. So he's a genius. And if I tell him that, if I said that to him too many times, he would hang up on me. That's how humble he is.
He was one of those guys, and I just had the opportunity of meeting him a couple times. But, Tony, he was one of those guys, when he spoke, you almost hung on every one of his words. You know, he had that sort of respect. I don't know any other way to say it.
Well, there's a couple things to that, man. He's like EF, remember the old commercial by EF Hutton, you know, when Dave started to speak. I mean, but he doesn't talk a lot. I mean, he's not a guy that walks around BSing people, you know, just chattering. You know, he's pretty quiet. But he's very opinionated, you know. He pays attention. He's very smart. So when he says something, he's going to select what he says, and it's going to be well thought of, and it's going to be well articulated. So that was part of his greatness as a coach. I mean, his ability to, have pitchers respect and trust him, and he knew how much he cared for them. He definitely had their back.
I'm actually surprised, Tony, that more pitchers even today don't go, maybe they are, and that we just don't hear about them. I try to read anything I can about the game, but more pitchers that are struggling don't go see him or even call you, because how many times did you bring guys that were kind of thought to be on their last leg or on the scrap heap, and they came to St. Louis? You think of Woody Williams, you think of Weaver, you think of those guys, and they just absolutely invigorated their career.
Yeah, it's – you know, somebody ought to write a book about it, because what he has done is just amazing. I think some of it, you know, when you're out of the limelight, you're not, you know, you don't get as much attention. You know, so Dave, 2011, when I quit, he quit. And then he stays. He's been an advisor of the Diamondbacks. Now he advises the Chicago White Sox. So he'll study pitching and make his contribution. But if you're not down there active, you know, people kind of forget you. And one of the problems now, the specific problem, is that there's so much emphasis on the formulas and using analytics. And Dave was a master of that, but he's a master of combining and balancing traditional analysis, you know, observational analysis, with some of the new pieces of information, percentages that you get. But there is a tendency nowadays to, you know, I think, I guess it is carefully, because people misunderstand me, I think the mathematics, the analytics are very important, but they must be balanced with traditional. If you exaggerate their importance, then you won't be as good as you could be.
It's so interesting, Tony, because situationally, the way that I was brought up in the game and the way I learned the game, I see these guys come up to the plate, you know, the last of the ninth inning, and they got the shift on, and they're more than one run down, and the entire left side of the infield is open. And I see them just ripping line you know, two hoppers out into right center where the whole infield is when you're one down. I mean, my dad would have said, if you don't lay down a bunt and get something down the left side of the field, you're not going to play.
Well, I mean, you know, we talk about that. I mean, I'm not coming back. I'm past that baton, but I think that's one rate and one place where managers need to take charge because, you know, a single to start a rally that's hit to the open spot in the shift, it's just like hitting a line drive single. And to allow teams to take that part of the field away from you is just not smart. But here's the problem. More and more owners are hiring executives who believe more in the numbers and don't have the background in strategy and adjusting. You know, part of what you learn over the years, you learn how to teach, how to coach, how to tweak, how to adjust to, if one day, Jay's not hitting, he's drawing the ball, and if you're a spectator, you better watch his pull side. I'm going to go to the other side of the course. So, that's lost. It's almost totally lost, but it's just frowned upon. A lot of the young managers, and I can't blame them, because if I had an opportunity to go, maybe I do blame them a little bit. They're getting their jobs because they're going to take the information and use it. And it's unfortunately, it's really not good for baseball because the game is so dynamic down the field that front offices should understand that the managers and the coaching staff have to be able to adjust whatever information, what the expectation was. The reality is going to be different quite often.
Well, Tony, it's happening in golf now, because Tiger's come out and because the money has exploded in our sport, all of these, we have analytics now. And I'd say every one of these tour players travels around with a little small, it looks like a laptop. It's called a flight scope or a TrackMan. Mm-hmm. But I watch these guys go out and play, and it's like, this is a stick and a ball game still. How the hell do you analyze something like that?
No. What it does, it just, again, the best thing is, whether it's golf or, what's your swing speed, or what's the speed of the ball coming off the club? What's the speed of the ball coming off the bat? Well, you have a high speed. Yours is not so high. Okay, so you tell the guy, hey, your speed's not high enough. He says, okay, that's, I got that. But how do I get it faster? That's coaching. Right. What am I doing that can increase my bat speed? And that's the part that is in many cases missing today, because there, when you have a number that reflects a player, maybe it's his defensive mental. That isn't necessarily who he is. That says who he is right now, but you can improve. If he's not going to his left, you can coach him to go better to his left. See, so it's a balance, and if you exaggerate one over the other, then if you ignore the analytics and you just rely on the traditional, you're missing an asset. But there's a lot of great stuff with tradition, man. It's we call it observational analytics.
Yeah, right.
And you see and you analyze.
We got Paul Goldschmidt now, who is an exceptional player. I loved watching him play when he was in the D-backs. And how much better him at first base makes our overall infield defense is just ridiculous. And it never gets mentioned.
Yeah, it's one of those places, traditionally, if first base, you want to have somebody produce a lot of runs. And if he just plays okay defense, and I don't doubt that every lineup needs run producers. So maybe you play him in third, first base, or left field, or something. But if you have a first baseman that's a defensive plus, the confidence in the guys throwing the ball that way, it makes them throw it away less because they just let it go. They know Goldie's going to catch it, and the way he maneuvers, especially in the National League with their bunts. He can come in and make plays for the advanced base. He's a great defender. He's a great base runner. He's a great person. And I'm so pleased that, he's gotten hot lately and he's helped that team get back in contention.
There's so many analogies, Tony, with baseball and golf and talk about all these analytics. But then at the bottom line, you mentioned this earlier, it goes back to score. It goes back to, I shot 73, you shot 72, you beat me.
Yeah, I mean, one guy's more fairways and the other guy beats him by a score because the guy lost strokes around the green, and I mean, same thing. You can one team gets 12 hits and scores two runs because they're, you know, they never put the hits back to back. You know, they're basically just swinging from their butts. The other team got 8 hits and scores 4 because they started a rally, moved the guy around, got him in. You know, so there's a place for everything. What you don't want to do is neglect anything. You want to make sure everything is part of the way you compete.
Man, this is fun. I could talk to you all day. I just want to ask you one last thing. What would you say the best thing a manager can do for a team and then also for a player?
Well, that's a great question. Well, I would say I pick best because that's the one most important. But if this is all you can do, then you're limited because, you know, the manager has a lot of responsibilities and it takes a lot of things. But the number one thing I believe nowadays is you have to have the ability to get through to each player, bring them together as a team, and motivate them to practice so that they learn their crafts and play the game to win competitively as a team, you know, sacrificing each other for the total good and bring them together as a true brotherhood. I think, and that starts with winning the frame of mind game. I think your number one chore is to get into the minds of the guys, get them excited for the right reason, doing the right things. But as I mentioned at the beginning, if all you can do is get them excited to play, and then you don't know what to do with them once they're excited, then you know you're not going to be good enough either. But if you've got a great mind about strategy and nobody wants to play for you, nobody hustles, you know, you're going to get beat more often.
Man, that's awesome. Well, I really can't thank you enough for taking the time. It's a thrill for me. I could sit here and talk baseball with you all day long. I still hear the fire in your voice, and I know you're 74 years old, and you got to miss the game, but I know you're doing stuff with Boston right now. I just wish you all the best.
Well, I enjoyed it, man. Thanks for the opportunity.
Man, I could have talked, not that Tony could have talked to me that long, but I could have talked to him for hours.
It was a great interview. It's part of your other passion, baseball, and I know you're a huge Tony La Russa fan. It was a lot of fun.
Okay, so Pearl, the thing I'm so excited to talk about this, the thing that jumps out to me about him, the very first thing is the passion. Here's a guy, 74 years old. He's working for his second team since he left the Cardinals, started with the D-backs. Now he's up and doing a special assignments for the Red Sox. But the guy is still plugged in and still so passionate about this game. You can just tell.
I loved the early part, too, when he talked about his passion, how he got his law degree and he was kind of looking to be out of baseball, but there was just a tug and he just had to kind of jump in there and take that opportunity to be a coach, even though he said he wasn't ready, et cetera, et cetera. And to your point, all the way to today, he's still out there after everything he's accomplished. And what did he say about creating lineups in his spare time?
Oh,
what was that?
That was one of my favorite parts because I said, man, Tony, what about these great rosters of players that played on, you know, clubs that you managed? And he said, yeah, Jay, sometimes I get a lineup card out and, you know, I have to fill out the full 24-man roster. I mean, who does that?
But that's crazy passion. That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, he pointed out from the beginning of his career,
yep,
middle of his career, obviously he had it because he was there all the time. And he just talked about that dedication, that preparation on and on. And then towards the end of his career, and who knows how many more years this guy can go with all the energy he's got, but he's still doing those kind of things. And the other part that shows me the passion of the game, look at all the changes in the game. He talked about the stats, et cetera, but he's still in there.
Before we go to that, how about how frank he was when he said, I got this job. I was young. I shouldn't have got it. My first job. Yeah. That's the White Sox. Mm-hmm. And how he basically got his ass kicked by these legends of the game, Sparky Anderson, Dick Williams, John McNamara.
Well, he got kicked by him, but he's also saying he learned from them. And if there was consistency with it, which there was in things he was saying, is being prepared, preparing yourself for the test, the yep. game, but also learning all along the way from these people. So, yeah, while he was getting his butt kicked, he was smart enough to learn from it.
Yeah, right, absolutely. Okay, so let's get back to your point that you were making about he made a huge comment about analytics and your gut. And I swear today, you know, when I see these players come up to the plate, their team is down by more than a run. The defense has a shift on, and so the entire left side or right side of the infield is open. And if you look, if I'd sign off if you could hit a two-run home run with nobody on, but you can't. And so the fact that you're swinging way into the defense, the way they're playing you, thinking, I mean, it makes no sense at all. And Tony said, that's why the manager needs to step in.
I love that, and you're the baseball wonk guy, but what about the analogy, because we've got our golf show here, what about the analogy between all the stats nowadays, which there weren't near as many when you played,
none.
Especially early.
Right.
Towards the end of your career, they would give you the sheets, which is kind of cool about. Yep. Sometimes you got to talk about that, because there's a ton of information that you could have from the tour, but man, you still have to play the game. You still have to have that feel, that gut innate build on the game.
We talked about that in the interview. I said, these guys are every guy on tour now is traveling around, Pearl, with these flight scopes and these launch monitors. You know, these, I'm forgetting the name. Anyway, you know how we are in the show. We're somewhere close.
Somewhere with the spin rates.
Yeah,
but that's
my point. You click the screen and we're talking about launch angle, dispersion spin, ball speed, club speed, all of this stuff. And it's at the end of the day, it's about your score. What'd you shoot?
Yeah.
You know, so there's got to be a blend.
Yep.
There's got to be a blend.
And you talked really eloquently about that blend. And you can see, again, the passion there. If you're just going to go off the stats in baseball, and I would say if you're just going to go off the stats in golf, you're missing a big, big part of the game and probably the part that puts you up amongst the top, top people.
Okay, and my favorite part, how about his talks about what I asked him, what were the characteristics of the folks that played great, that were the greatest players. And he talked about knowing your craft and working your craft and understanding what to do and understanding situational baseball. All the sort of things in golf where, you know, we talked about this with my career. I was extremely marginal early in my career with my short game. It was either really good or really bad. My dad used to say it was either penthouse or outhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Which I really appreciated.
Thanks, Dad, for pointing that out.
Appreciate that,
Dad. That made it clear.
Yeah, what are you trying to say, Dad? What are you trying to say?
Did he say that to you when you're actually on the golf course, or did he wait till you're done?
And he might have said it on the course. And the other thing is, those were not the exact words he used.
I think we know that.
Okay. All right, so
we're clear. Pretty straightforward.
We're clear on that. But until I identified that weakness and that need, how do you know? And unfortunately for me, it was 10 years in, you know, 5-10 years into my career, instead of being something I learned in college where you could have helped me in college.
Yeah. I think there, again, the analogy, and you know me, I like to kind of relate things back to business as well. Every business guy I ask, when I said, what's the difference? When did you make it? What happened? I kind of asked the question, how important are the idiosyncrasies, the finer points, that kind of underneath information that you can really only get when you've been in the game for a while? Every single time I ask that question of a guy or a lady, they come back with the same thing. It's imperative. It's everything. It's the distinguishing thing between the, quote, obvious things that are out there. Yeah, we all want to hit a 300 yards.
Right.
But what do we do under these conditions? What do we do under these pressures? So I think I loved when he had that answer. It's those little finer points. That's why he kept saying, know their craft. The people that really know their craft know all the idiosyncrasies, and I think that transcends baseball, golf, business, across the board.
And life. It's hard work. It's hard work. It's working on the small things. One of the things that I learned about golf was I was really pretty damn good at the bigger things.
Yes,
and
were.
I sucked at some of the smaller stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. On and off.
You could have disagreed with me. You could have absolutely disagreed with me.
Well, I'm not sure if your point would have been made.
Any of you guys do radio out there? Yeah, I know. Bro. No, it is so true. I mean, and once those became apparent, it was so glaring.
But to that point, they're not always apparent because you want to go back to something else. You want to try to hang on to something else. But I think when he says learn your craft, who has the courage and the awareness to dig into those little specific things to
right
say,
on.
How am I going to do it? Because some of them you're thinking, especially out on tour, how are you going to hit some of those chips? How are you going to handle some of that? It's tough. It's another whole part of the game.
It is. And man, it's everything. And those little, you know, Vince Lombardi had the coolest line when he was talking to his players, when he was coaching the Green Bay Packers. He said the outcome of a football game is going to hinge on one or two plays every single game, John.
Could not agree more.
But he goes, fellas, the problem is we don't know if it's the opening kickoff or if it's the last Hail Mary. So we have to be present and we have to be there for every single play from the opening kickoff to the end of the game because we don't know when that play's coming. And, man, I took some plays off.
But knowing your craft, wouldn't you say later in your career in particular?
Did you say ladder?
Ladder.
Ladder.
Later?
Later.
Later in your career.
Later. I got
late
a ladder in the car.
Late in your career. God dang it, I'm trying to make a point here. Late in your career, couldn't you sometimes identify when that shot was, when that time was in the round in the tournament?
Without question.
No question.
There was no,
I kind of
ran
that.
Me over a little bit. I know you liked it, but you weren't hitting it. I was like, this is pretty important.
I had some of that too. Not
I know,
just,
I'm just
but
kidding.
But the fun part was, it was kind of neat to say, well, this is it.
Yep.
This
is it.
And there might be another shot, but this shot, if this doesn't get pulled off, it ain't going to happen.
No, it
right
doesn't
here.
Matter.
And it was kind of cool because that, at least for me, took a long time to really develop what that was. And and it gives you a different sense of planning it and executing.
You know, that's going to do it for the back nine. Stick around. We're going to the 19th hole. This is golf.
What are we doing in the 19th hole, Jay?
We got a little whack and chase coming up.
Baby.
That's called in the radio business, Pearl, because we are in the radio business.
Foreshadowing?
No. Meat? What is that called?
That's a tease right there.
So, can Pearly call it foreshadowing?
You
can call
it whatever you want.
No,
that's more literary. I'm sorry. I got ahead of myself.
Come back. This is 101 ESPN and Golf with Jay Delsing.
Urban Chestnut Brewing Company is proud to be an official sponsor of 101 ESPN's newest show, Golf with our friend Jay Delsing. Just like Jay, Urban Chestnut is born right here in St. Louis. With three local brewing and restaurant locations, you won't travel far to sample straight from the source. If you're heading out to the links this weekend, or if you're just in the mood for a classic German-style beer, grab a four-pack of our fresh, refreshing Zwickel Bavarian Lager wherever craft beers are sold. Urban Chestnut Brewing Company, St. Louis, Missouri. Prost!
Golf Discount is where St. Louis has shopped for all of its golf equipment needs since 1976. There are two locations in town, one in South County just off of Lemay Ferry, and one in O'Fallon at Highways K and N. Golf Discount is, and always will be, locally owned. They employ the most experienced golf staff you'll find anywhere in town. And if you're looking to get yourself some custom fit equipment, go to Golf Discount. They use the GC Quad Launch Monitor. This ensures you will always get the perfect fit you're looking for. Visit Golf Discount today.
It's time for the 19th hole on Golf with Jay Delsing. The 19th hole is brought to you by Mike Duffy's Pub and Grill.
Mike Duffy's Pub and Grill, the best burgers in town since 1986. Mike Duffy's Pub and Grill, the best burgers in town since 1986.
Hey, thanks for staying with us. We just finished 18 holes, and we are headed to our favorite part of the day, the 19th hole. This is Golf with Jay Delsing. Jay Delsing is here. My buddy Pearly is with me. And Pearly, Mike Duffy's a great partner of the show, our official 19th hole. August 23rd from 5 to 7 or later.
Yes.
We've been known to stay a little later. Yes. You got a happy hour at the Richmond Heights store. We're going to have some games.
You showed me the one game tonight.
What do you think about it?
I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, we got a little chippy.
How far is the chip going to be? That's,
I'm thinking 10, 12 feet, 12,
And we'll move in as we go?
Yeah, exactly.
Good.
Maybe
good.
1 foot. Yeah. So we're going to have games. We're going to have beer prizes. We're going to, So, guys, come visit us at Mike Duffy's on the 23rd of August from 5 to 7 at the Richmond Heights store. All right.
Wagon Chase.
Pearly?
Let's go.
Why don't you take us into this Wagon Chase segment?
Well, it's my favorite segment. Who do we have, Meat?
The phones will not stop ringing, guys. Diane is our latest on Whack and Chase.
Hey, Diane. Thank you for calling us here at Whack and Chase.
How you doing tonight?
Hi, how are you this evening?
How you doing, Diane?
I'm doing good.
Where are you from?
I'm from Cabri, Illinois.
You from where?
Wow.
What's the name?
Cabri.
Where's that? Where's that relation to Chicago? Everybody knows where Chicago is. Where is it from
everywhere.
Chicago?
It's a couple hours south. It's between Kankakee and Pontiac.
So, small farming community?
Very small farming community.
All right. Well, perfect. How long have you... Well, actually, the first question is, what do you want Jay to help you with in your golf game? That's where we got to start.
I cannot putt worth a darn, so I need a lot of help in my putting.
Okay, we can take a look at that. What sort of handicap do you have, Diane? Diane, what sort of handicap do you have?
Oh, she's asking somebody what her handicap is. Give her a second for crying out loud. Her handicap, first handicap is she doesn't know what her handicap is.
Because I don't golf enough. I have seven grandkids. That's where I spend my time.
Oh, but good
I'm
for you.
Oh, wonderful.
And golf a little bit. And, you know, if I could improve a little bit, I'd probably golf more.
What are the ages? Give us the age range on your grandkids.
8 years old to 8 months old.
Wow, good for you. That keeps you busy, I bet.
Get those kids out on the golf course, Diane. It'll be a cluster, but it'll be a lot of fun.
And when you're playing golf, who are you playing with?
Usually my husband.
There's the handicap right
there.
That
is your handicap. But if you had told us that, whomever that man is, we would have said, we're sorry.
I don't care what the number is. I don't care what the number is. Eight grandkids, not a handicap, a cool thing, but clearly a deterrent to great golf.
Yep.
And a husband that she's playing with all the time, which is a deterrent to great golf and is a handicap.
I don't know if we can put that on the kids. I mean, Diane, can we say eight kids is a deterrent to play great golf?
Well, yeah, it's a distraction.
There's
that grandma that's not going to say anything bad, no matter what, about the kids.
What a great concept, grandkids. I don't have any yet, but I can't wait because you can just return them.
Yes.
You know, it's almost like a rental. It's like, this is awesome.
I got a bunch of them myself, and they are a ton of fun. I've got a little one with us right this week, and he's just so much fun. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Good. And as a matter of fact, he said for the first time, he said, Grandpa, we're passing a driving range on the way to the house. And he says, Grandpa, can we go hit some golf balls? I about melted right on the spot. I'm like, absolutely.
Oh, you can buy him a set of clubs right
on the
spot.
I
know you are. That's great. That's great.
So you want some help with the putter. So give us a little bit of feedback. So you're out there putting. You're playing with your husband. Is it just little putts, long putts, all putts? Give us a little bit of kind of feedback. What
all
happens
putts.
And how you feeling in your gut when you're putting?
Yeah, all putts, problem. Anything. I can't keep my wrist from breaking. I don't think I read a green very well either.
Well, the one thing is, you know, you don't get to play a lot. Those things, the stuff you're talking about, Diane, it's not like the most normal motion to make a stroke or to try to putt a ball. And reading a green is a nuance. You know, it comes with a little more time. I mean, do you like the idea of playing golf? Do you like being outside? Is that something that appeals to you? So if you could putt a little better, you might want to play more?
I think we would go out and play more.
Well, Jay, just talk to her a little bit. You've got a great thing you help people with, and it's just like the bucket of water, this concept to help Diane be able to have a sense of reading putts.
Right. So, Diane, basically, you want to try to find the high point on the green. And sometimes that's easier said than done with the way they design some of these damn greens now. There's bumps and mounds and things like that everywhere. But if you're in a quadrant, you know, sometimes you'll have these crazy sloping greens that go all over the place. If you're in the quadrant where the flagstick is, you want to look. Someone told me when I was a kid, I've always remembered this, that if I had a bucket of water and I poured it on the ground, which way would the water trail? Which way would the water run out? And that always helped me to find the low point. So generally speaking, that ball's going towards that low point, you know, some way or another. Now, depending on where the hole is, you know, you might be underneath a hole and you're going to be going straight up the hill. That's going to make that putt a lot slower, right?
Yes.
And then going down the hill, you know, it's going to make it much faster. And then the side, you know, depending on how far on the left or the right of it are, you know, it's going to make it break that way.
It's so funny when you just explained that to Diane. I'm playing in a Canadian tour event, I don't know, 30 years ago or something, up in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada.
Our buddy Bernie Federko is from Saskatchewan.
Exactly, exactly. And I'm playing very well, and I'm playing with this guy who's playing well, and he gets up on this hole, Diane, and he kind of ran into what you ran into. All of a sudden, he couldn't read the green. So his first putt was uphill, and he got it like halfway there. Then he hit it really hard the next time and got it like 3 feet by. And then the next one, it's like somehow he didn't know it was downhill, and he hit it and went like 8 feet by. And he just yells out. This is how much pressure and kind of golf can make you go crazy. He yells out, the fast ones are downhill, and the slow ones are uphill. And we all looking at him like, well, that's true.
Well, that's a good place to start.
Why don't you think about that?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it can drive you a little bit crazy. But the bucket, so just wherever you see that water, if you could in your mind's eye see that water flow, that's going to get a sense of whether you got an uphill, a downhill, a side hill, that type of thing. But it's a really good visual and kind of give you a feel for it.
Here's what something else people do all the time, Diane. They'll hit their first putt, and let's say it'll be downhill and be really, really fast. okay? And they'll knock it past the hole. 99 times out of 100, the next one comes back is halfway. But, hell, of course it is, because it's back up the hill. You know, it's one of those things. It's all situational. But a couple of tips on your putting. Don't worry as much about breaking your wrists. You do want to kind of keep them together. You do want to feel like you rock a triangle that starts with your right and your left shoulder, and the fulcrum point is down where your hands are holding the putter. But the bigger thing is, don't move your body from the waist down, Diane. That'll take out a huge amount of hit that you have in the putt. You want to rock and use those hips as you're hitting your driver and your irons and things like that. But with your putter, you don't want that. You just want it to be kept still.
And be fair.
You know, my husband tells me that, and I just don't get it. But with you telling me, I think I got it.
Oh, man, I might have to get your husband's number and give him a little trouble about that, even though we don't know him. I like that idea.
And if there's any possible way to, the next couple times, respectfully tune him out. Don't really listen to him.
Oh, I got to tell you. So, Diane, I grew up as a caddy up in North St. Louis, and the worst days of working at the shop was the husband-wife tournaments because there were fights. You could tell people are coming in. The ones that played well are happy, you know, maybe they had a glass of wine. The other ones were like, one gets out on her side of the cart, he gets out on his side of the cart, and they're walking separate ways. We were laughing, you know, we were teenagers. But it's just not an easy mix to have your husband try to coach you, especially.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is the case for you, but half the husbands aren't worth a damn either.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
they don't necessarily putt well.
But...
yeah.
There she is. She's so nice. He kind of is. Well, that's perfect. That's nice that you say that. That's why you're happily married and playing golf together. So that's a good start off the bat. Well, hopefully that helped you. Diana, it was an awful lot of fun talking to you.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling in, Diane. Enjoy those grandkids.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Diane, what a cool lady. Our grandkids, she kind of snuck that into the story.
And playing with your husband and that dance, she handles it very, very well. I think her whole game gets better the more she can kind of separate some of that side coaching.
Yeah, yep. It's great stuff. The Whack and Chase is becoming popular. Diane, again, thanks for calling in. And, you know, man, the show flew by. Probably that's going to wrap up the 19th hole. We made it through another show.
Love it. Absolutely love it. It was fun.
Meet, thanks so much for working the board for us and trying to keep us on track. That is not an easy job. This is Golf with Jay Delsing on 101 ESPN and Hit 'em Straight, St. Louis.
That was Golf with Jay Delsing, brought to you by Whitmore Country Club. Tune in next Sunday for more from Jay, John, and the other pros and experts from the golf world. In the meantime, you can find all of Jay's shows at 101ESPN.com, as well as at jdelsinggolf.com.